woman made across the floor. Says she right on out the door and into the glade, and everybody promenade.
You're tuned to the Square Dance Radio Network. Today is Wednesday, February 29th, 2012.
And you're listening to the Do-Si-Do Show, episode number 36.
Hi, I'm your host, Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland.
And I'm Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Hey, Dale, happy Leap Year Day.
Hey.
Hello, Square Dance community. Today we have the second part of our interview with Roy and Betsy Gatta from New Jersey.
Yeah, happy Leap Year Day. Happy birthday to all of those people who look like they're 60 but are actually 15.
Yeah.
We have dog years, we have years, and then I guess we have leap
years.
year day, whatever. So, Barb, what'd you do this past weekend?
I had a fabulous square dance weekend out in California and had a lot of fun out there. What did you do?
I spent the weekend calling, and actually a good bit of the beginning of this week calling out of town. I got to try out a whole bunch of new material and got to meet a bunch of really nice people as well.
And you are really busy. You callers do call, don't you?
Who'd you like to say hello to today?
A little shout out to my friend Joe from New York, who gave me a call this past week, and I haven't had a chance to talk with him in a long time, so that was really fun to hear his voice. And you, Dale?
I'd like to say hi to all the club officers who keep the clubs running, making sure the schedules are out there, making sure the callers are booked and the halls are ready. Thank you to everybody who does that.
Amen to that. Yeah, it does not go unappreciated. Sometimes you don't always hear the appreciation, but it's there. We know how much work everybody does, so thank you.
Yes, indeed. Let's hop right back into the second part of our interview with Roy and Betsy Gatta out of New Jersey. You also work at caller schools. You had mentioned one of them before, and also being a caller coach, Betsy. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? And then, Roy, can you talk to us about your involvement with cueing schools?
Okay. Well, teaching people to call, to me, is, I find it really exciting. But it's frustrating in some ways because they don't speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my analogy about square dancing. I believe square dancing is, you know, everybody asks, well, is it always done in English? And then my answer is not really. The words are English, but the meaning is a separate meaning in square dance.
Mm-hmm.
And
our own
that's
vocabulary.
Why, yeah, it's a separate, small vocabulary. I mean, if I went out on the street and told some people out there to coordinate, they would not make a column and circulate 1.5 spots and do all the other stuff. They would try and plan out what they were going to do.
Right.
After they looked at me as if I had two heads. And so my theory is that dancers, when you learn a foreign language, they learn to understand it. And that's where dancers are. Most of the average dancers in the world understand the language. They follow directions. And when you become a caller, you're actually learning to speak the language. And so it's very frustrating for some of the newer callers because they're like long-term dancers and they don't understand why they can't come up with the words. And I'm going, it's because you're learning to speak the language. You understood the language. But it's very exciting to watch them gain the idea and the power. Because when, you know, you were talking about the cure out in Pennsylvania and she was apologetic. And once they realize that they understand what they're doing, they gain the power of the command behind the microphone. And that's really exciting. We here in Northern New Jersey, the Callers Association sponsored classes. We had some money and felt we needed more callers. So we sponsored some classes, and I'm watching now the callers that, went through those classes, and they're starting to take dates, and I can call on them and say, would you sub for me at this particular dance because I need something or whatever, or can you do a date here? And I'm watching them gain in power. The people who went through the color school that Tom and I have, a lot of them are in Pennsylvania, and I'm close enough so I can see them. You know, like I go to the Pennsylvania State Convention or I go to the National Convention, and if I can, I get into their halls and I listen to how well they've, how much more they've developed with what we first gave them. We give them the tools. They have to develop them. Mm-hmm. I can't create a caller. I can only give them the knowledge and the background information. They have to create the caller. Mm-hmm. But I can watch them grow and develop, and it's really exciting. And a group of folks who've been to the Pennsylvania school with Tom and me, they all lived within an hour's radius of each other, and they started forming a practice group. And that practice group is now a New Callers Association.
Oh, that's nice.
And that's, like, really exciting.
Yeah, the babies are fledging.
Oh, yeah. And they're flying and fleeing the nest, and it's good.
Yeah.
And it's always fun to watch, like, Betsy's face light up when there's an aha moment where a caller will come up to Betsy, who she mentored or went through one of the schools, and she goes, and they'll say, I was calling, and I saw what you told me. I didn't have to work for it.
Yeah.
I saw it. It really works. And Betsy goes, well, yeah.
But it's so neat when they, you know, they actually see it for themselves.
So I used to get that when I was coaching baseball, when a player would, you know, do something that I've been after him for half a season. They go, wow, Mr. God, it really works. I should
now
have listened.
I get it.
That's
great. That's the real reason I was a school teacher, was so I could coach baseball.
Okay.
I like that. Roy, are there QR schools, or have you done
There are QR schools. There's only a couple of them left. There's one down in the Carolinas that I think the Easter Days still run, and there's one out in the Midwest. But they're not as prevalent as caller schools because I attended a caller school with the Churells that they ran up in Vermont.
QR school, you mean?
A QR school, sorry. I've been to a caller school. I've been to a QR school, and they let me come up and actually kind of audit it. Their condition was, okay, you can come up, but you actually have to audit it as a participant, because I was thinking of running my own.
Uh-huh.
And through that experience, it was a 4 or 5 day school, I kind of thought that learning to cue is much more effective on a one-on-one basis.
Mm-hmm.
That in the cuer school is more about how to teach figures. As cueing isn't all that hard. Teaching round dancing is hard. But if you have any sort of musical sense, you can pretty much be a cuer, because it's just all about the timing. You don't have to think like a caller does. You have to present it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot less involved in learning to cue, but there's a whole lot involved in learning how to teach the round dance figures, and that's I think better done one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still thinking of running a more like a learn to cue weekend, as opposed to, I think a caller's school might be better in a 2 or 3 day setting as opposed to a 5 or 6 day setting.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things you can teach people at a cure school, little things that don't seem all that important necessarily to the outsider, but whether I say, for instance, half a box back or back half a box. And depending on the rhythm, I have to say it one way or the other. To be effective as a cure. Depending on the rhythm, that same half a box backwards or back half a box, the footwork is different. So how you say it will help the dancer more. Those are the little things that you can, you know, teach people to cue. But what I've always told people I've worked with, you know, go to a cure to learn what to say and when to say it. Go to a caller school to learn how to present it.
Oh.
Because they, you know, watch a caller on stage. The old school, way back, they used to teach cuers to kind of don't be part of the, you know,
Don't interfere with
be,
the music.
Be kind of a disembodied voice, okay? And I learned
that's why you get
people,
a lot of deadpan cures.
Learned from a lot of people that, you know, you're up there. Part of the reason you're up there, let's be honest, is to satisfy your own ego. And any caller or cure who says that's not part of the equation is not being really honest with themselves. And so the cure is an entertainer. But I found that all my, you know, years of being around callers and being at caller schools and being associated with, you know, some of the best in the business, that really influenced my style behind the microphone. So,
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually told cures, you can learn a lot by going to a caller school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the actual technique and how to put the needle down, as we used to say back in the day.
Right.
Yeah, how to handle a microphone. Mm-hmm. You know, how to get over that up there on the stage where how am I going to get the words out when my stomach is in my throat?
And my knees are jelly.
Mm-hmm.
So at least now we don't have to put a needle on a record. We just have to push a button.
Right.
On the laptop.
Yeah.
How much are you two calling these days? Can you tell us about your home program or weekends or festivals that you would go to?
Okay. I don't do a lot of weekends or festivals necessarily, but I do a lot of guest spots on weekends. So basically my calling schedule at this point is I have Mondays off, I teach on Tuesdays, I have a Wednesday morning group, I call some Wednesday evenings, but not too many, I have a Thursday evening class. I call for other clubs most Fridays and Saturdays. The Rutgers Promenaders, our home club, is first and third Sunday afternoons, and I have a plus DVD workshop that meets some Sunday nights. So I'm calling 5 to 6 times a week.
Wow.
It's usually...
Which is why I got rid of my day job.
She usually ends up doing between 220 to 240 engagements per year.
Wow.
I was indicating to Betsy, we're heavily involved with the campers.
Right.
We do have a small RV that we, because we enjoy doing the Square Dance Camper weekends. We do that. And we have our Labor Day weekend, which Betsy's been doing Labor Day at a campground since the late 70s. That's kind of a traditional thing.
Yeah, it was for many, many years. It was me and Mike and whoever, and then for a while it was Tom Miller, and now it's Bill Harrison and I at Cherry Ridge Campground. So that's one of the weekends I always do, and we do the camping weekends. I do some fly-ins for the gay weekends. Have never seemed to have gotten on the list to be hired by any of the regular festivals.
Like the Wascos and that type of thing. So I have my round dance groups. I have first and third Monday nights. I have a double session every Tuesday night. I have every Wednesday night. These are all in different towns, except for one Wednesday a month. And then I have every Thursday night. So I have four nights a week. I have different round dance groups. And that's a lot of preparation.
So he teaches on his own.
So Monday through Thursday, we really don't see each other a lot because Wednesday night, actually, Betsy, that's her night to go contra dancing. And on the Monday nights when she's off, she goes to a C3B workshop. So, and then Fridays and Saturdays, we try and keep so that we work together.
Yeah, that's nice.
I will take a round dance spot locally if Betsy's already booked at a square dance club that doesn't do rounds. But when people call me, they've been calling me for like 2013 and 2014 just to do rounds, and I say, I'm not booking that far ahead on the rounds until I see Betsy's schedule. And they all respect that.
Nice, yeah. How far are you booked out, Betsy?
I'm booking for 2013-14.
Okay, yeah. Wow.
I'm getting the calls.
Yeah.
And, of course, we would always take time for Caller Lab and the National Square Dance Convention. They're blocked out on our calendars. Round the Lab, Caller Lab, it's the National Square Dance Convention, and the IAGSDC Convention.
When we can.
They're all blocked out on future calendars. That's, I don't know when you want to talk about things like the National Square Dance Convention, but our philosophy is that's the week for the callers and queuers to give back.
That's a nice attitude, and it does feel that way. You can get that sense.
Would you talk a little bit about how much you go out and actually get a chance to dance?
First and third Monday nights, I actually dance with a quote tape group, a workshop that does C3 to keep my dancing skills up in that program, because I personally don't feel that I should be calling a program I can't dance.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to go to the workshop just to be able to continue to say I can call it that program. I go contra dancing every Wednesday night that I am not calling, just for the sheer enjoyment of it. Roy and I go dancing fairly, well, the club at Rutgers, as I said, we share. So if we're in the area and we're not working, we'll go dance there. But a lot of times we're busy, so we don't get to go dancing together as often as we might. When Roy works at the Harvest Moon Classic Festival, and we get to go dancing there, and we've finally blocked out a weekend to go dancing in July at a different festival.
And we
where neither of us is working.
And there's a couple of weekends throughout the year that we have marked on our calendar that we go and dance. Usually fly-ins, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Like Rehoboth. We block them because we get a chance to go dancing, but if something big comes along, if someone wants to book us for the whole weekend, well, okay, we'll take it, but we won't take local dances on certain weekends throughout the year just so we can go and dance and actually, more importantly, socialize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sounds funny that you're booking your dancing for one weekend in July. I had to snicker at that a little bit.
That's one of the things I've always admired about both of you that I don't see a lot of other callers doing, is going to weekends where you really do just get a chance to dance. And, you know, somebody says, oh, I saw Betsy and Roy. And I think the first two or three times, I'm like, really? I didn't know they were calling this weekend. And then I realized, oh, it's great that you're out promoting the activity and socializing and getting to see everybody.
Yeah. And having fun. Yeah. I enjoy dancing. I love to dance.
Yeah, we notice you get out there quite a bit also.
Yeah, Kathy and I just went to ACDC this weekend, and that was just a real joy. The Cedars, Debbie and Caitlin Cedar showed up.
Oh, cool.
Sort of out of the blue and danced. So, Roy, can you tell us a little bit about your involvement with Roundel Lab?
Sure. I guess I joined Roundel Lab pretty much as soon as I started queuing back in the late 70s, and it wasn't really involved very much at all. They didn't have an attendance requirement at their convention. Well, you had to attend one, but then that was it. You didn't have to go every 3 years or something like that. And being a school teacher, with their convention being before the National Square Dance Convention, that was always like the last week of school.
Mm, yeah.
It was really tough to get away for that, so I really wasn't involved. Then, but I kept up my membership and I read all the stuff. And then, as I started, you know, thinking about retiring from teaching, and I started doing a lot of committee work for Round the Lab. I got involved in a lot of the discussions. I became a Round the Quarter chairman for like 10 years, which was 4 years longer than you're supposed to hold a committee chair, but of course, you know how it is. Well, no one else wants to do it because it was a lot of walk. And then as soon as I knew that I was going to be able to retire, I decided to try and, you know, get on the board of directors. And I think on the second try, I was successful and got very involved. Betsy and I are currently on the executive committee of Roundel Lab.
Because Roundel Lab, you hold office as a couple, if you are a couple.
Oh.
Yeah, basically their board of directors is 12 couples, whereas Caller Labs Board of Governors is 25 individuals. So, but you're elected as a couple, but yet you have individual votes.
Interesting.
So the only distinction is made in Round the Lab when someone is elected chairman, one of the couple has to be the designated chairman. So in other words, it couldn't be Roy and Betsy Gatta Round the Lab chairman. It would have to be Roy or Betsy Gatta.
And it would be Roy.
So right now we're very, very heavily involved in Round the Lab. We're heavily involved in everything. But
well, the activity certainly appreciates that.
Sure.
Betsy, your involvement with Caller Lab and with Round the Lab?
Okay, well, with Round the Lab, basically, I'm there as, you know, as Roy's partner, and there are some things I have an individual opinion about. A lot of times I defer to Roy or I ask his opinion because he knows more. Basically, you know, he does all of the queuing. I don't go with him very often because I'm somewhere else.
Right.
I'm gaining a lot of knowledge just by sitting back and being quiet and listening so that I feel. These days, when I first went to Round the Lab, I just shut up. There was nothing I needed to say. And now, these days, I feel like I can actually have a reasonable, knowledgeable position on something. Caller Lab, at its inception, was an invite group. And so the first leaders met, and one of them invited my father. That was... And then, of course, my dad invited me. So this would be 1976, I believe, was my first Caller Lab convention. And I have been to everyone since then.
Wow.
And I'm currently on the Board of Governors. And I've served on the Board of Governors. Let's see, I served 3-year terms. I think it was 4 3-year terms, took a year off. And I think I'm, I don't know. I think I'm in my fourth term of the second group.
Wow.
I have to look.
A long time.
And I've served on the executive committee twice. And I'm currently chairman of the caller training committee. Now, I have to be specific. The caller training committee is basically involved in teaching callers how to call. And then there's also the caller coach committee, which you have to be an accredited caller coach to be a part of. So I'm part of the caller training committee, which was before the caller coach committee, because the caller training committee wrote the manuals that the caller coaches, you know, use as part of their tests. Currently, we're involved in, and we have been for a couple of years, in writing a guideline for people who want to mentor callers. Who, you know, like a local caller who says, you know, their buddy goes, "Hey, I want to learn to call. Can you help me?" And the buddy goes, "Yeah, sure, learn this singing call." And then what do they do after that? This is supposed to be a step-by-step procedure to help them after that. This is what you want to tell them. And I think it's really cool because we had people contributing from all over the world, including a gentleman from, I think it's the Czech Republic, wrote part of the book. And as on the board, you do have to attend every year unless there's some dire reason, and then you have to get a waiver. And I have not missed the board meeting, you know, convention since I started. And also, it also is a wonderful experience to kind of recharge your batteries and talk to your peers. One of the first things that I found about the Caller Lab convention when I was, you know, quote, a young caller, you know, not famous, whatever, was one of the rules they had, and they still hold to it, is that when you stand up to speak, you are supposed to state your name and where you're from. Regardless of whether you're Jerry Story or Betsy Gatta or, you know, Ralph Smith. So everybody is kind of treated equally in that manner. And everybody's input is valued.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And one of the things that drives me crazy, and this would be a good place to talk about it, is when I go to Caller Lab, you come back and the dancers go, well, what did you do with the list? Because that's what they see Caller Lab as, is just the list. And I say, we did nothing with the list. So what I started doing a few years ago was taking the program for Caller Lab, because it's a lot of educational sessions. There are committee meetings, but it's a lot of professional education sessions. And I took the direction, the newsletter that has the schedule with the description of all the seminars,
yes,
and I put it in a loose leaf notebook in plastic and take it to the dancers. And then they say, what did you do with the list? I said, we did nothing with the list. Read this.
Read this.
This will tell you what we were doing. And it gives them a better idea, at least some people a better idea, that Caller Lab is not just about doing the list. The lists are done in committee.
Yeah.
Just let me interject here. So we were talking with somebody about taxes one year, and they were saying, well, to be able to claim a convention as a deduction for your tax purposes, there had to be something like a minimum of 6 hours of professional improvement sessions throughout the day. And Caller Lab has like 12. And so it was not a problem. And just if I can interject, I mean, when I was finally able to go to Caller Lab, because it often conflicted with my teaching, but like a lot of teachers, I found a way around that. But just, you know, meeting with other callers' partners and talking with them was a very good experience, and I discovered that a lot of the newer callers' partners, where their partner started calling, and they were like just overwhelmed by the enormity of it, and then they start talking with people like myself and other callers' partners who've been in it for, you know, since, was I guess the Dead Sea was only sick, they realize, oh, okay, it's other people have gotten through it, and we had a little camaraderie there, so just a recharging of batteries, as Betsy said.
That's great. Another question that I hear is level versus program. Betsy, I think at some point I heard you talking a little bit about that. Talk about the distinction and why we're using program as opposed to level?
Okay. Well, this is my belief. I don't know exactly why. Prior to Caller Lab, would that be BC?
Yes.
Prior to Caller Lab, there was no uniformity in what different clubs danced. In different parts of the country, they might have lists. The Sets in Order Square Dance magazine had the list of the basic 50 and the 75. Mm-hmm. But that didn't mean that every caller in the country taught those basic 75 calls. Mm-hmm. And each club caller would call kind of what they liked. And so traveling was kind of difficult at times.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that Caller Lab had as a goal was to make everything uniform so that you could travel and know exactly what you were expecting. And when they started creating the list, they used a term that was already in vogue. The term that was already in vogue, we had beginner level and club level. And they used level. And then at some point in time, fairly early on, they changed it to program. And every list that I work off of, that I put on the table when I call, says Caller Lab Mainstream Program, Caller Lab Plus Program, Caller Lab Advanced Program. And my belief is that the term level is a loaded word. It leads to people using the different programs as status symbols. I'm a plus dancer. I'm not a plus dancer. I'm a square dancer. I dance whatever I can, whenever I choose to. And that, to me, is the difference, and that's why I believe strongly in using the term program, because program doesn't lend itself as easily to being a status symbol.
Mm-hmm.
It's a personal thing with me, because I watch people going, well, I'm a such-and-such dancer, la-di-da. Well, you know, that's not why we developed the different lists. We developed the different lists so you understood what calls you were going to need to know if you went to a certain dance.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't to make one group of dancers, quote, better than another.
Mm. And the word level was, if you look at, so many people are into gaming. It's, okay, we have to get to the next level.
Level up.
Level 5. Yeah. So when you say the word level, it's like, if you're at a certain level, okay, well, when are you going to go to the next level?
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who shouldn't learn more than what they already did. And
so the members of Carter Lab felt that the word level kind of had the connotation that you have to keep going to the next one.
Mm.
So they switched to the word program.
And the idea was there was never an idea that you had to keep learning. And people shouldn't feel demeaned because they don't want to learn anymore. They shouldn't feel pressured. And yet that term level pushes them to do stuff that they don't want to.
One of the things we correct dancers, they'll come up to us and say, well, I'm only a mainstream dancer. And we'll say, never say that. You're a mainstream dancer. Are you happy at mainstream? And you're not only a mainstream dancer. You dance mainstream and you're happy. Don't apologize for it.
Actually, recently I came up with a term that I thought was really good because the Club Rutgers Promenaders dances mainstream. And I was figuring out how to say this to somebody one day, and I said, we dance exclusively mainstream.
I like that.
Exclusively is so much more positive than only.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the talk today.
Yeah, the insight into how they work with other callers or caller wannabes and what they know and don't know when they come in.
Yeah, it was interesting as they were talking. I was replaying in my mind sessions that I've had with individual or a group of callers or talking at a caller school about each of those issues. And I'm like, yeah, I remember that day. And very impressed with the amount of donated time that they put into Rounda Lab and Caller Lab, and also the insight into the differences between the two.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I was happiest to hear about was Betsy's understanding of level versus program.
I only use the word level, and I'm going to try and use the word program a lot more now.
What do you have coming up this weekend?
This coming weekend, we're going to celebrate one of my sister's 50th birthday. I don't know if Jan would let... Ooh, I didn't mean to say her name. Oh, sorry, Jan. If Jan is listening, pay no attention to what I said. You're not really 50. You're just as young as you feel. We're going to celebrate her birthday this weekend, so I'm looking forward to that.
Great. I like that. You're as young as you feel. When I was 49, I felt like I was about 19. I turned 50. And I started feeling like I was about 70.
You skipped a whole bunch there in the middle. And what do you have coming up this weekend?
I had the pleasure and honor of calling a C2 weekend here. Where it had originally been scheduled for York, Pennsylvania, and has been moved to McLean, Virginia. It should be a very fun weekend. I know most of the people that will be there. I've already gotten requests specifically to spend at least an hour working on rotates.
Oh, there's a good one. You're going to be a busy guy.
So it should be a really good time.
Sounds like it. Great.
Yeah. And we'd like to say thanks again to our guests, Roy and Betsy Gatta. Tune in again next week when we'll continue the interview.
This is Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Goodbye, Dale. Have a good week, everyone.
And this is Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland. Ciao, Barb. Happy dancing.
Bye. Bye.